This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Tuesday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I am Emily Thompson from Saugerties, New York, and you are listening to a special jumping edition of Horses in the Morning on Horse Radio Network for July 1st, episode 946. This episode is brought to you by Us Equestrian. Good morning, Horse World.
Oh, my God. It's Tuesday.
It's top-class show jumping at the very best.
Every horse is different, and you've got to be able to understand and read each different horse.
Remember, we're looking for those clears in this round to go forward to the jump off.
You can't ask for anything more. It's just pure theatre.
Well, good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us here at Horses in the Morning. We hope you have your cup of coffee and you're doing well this morning. Good morning, Emily, all the way from beautiful New York.
Good morning, Glenn. Happy to be back.
Saugerties up there, the home of hits up there and above the city.
It is, yes, 100 miles north. I do make the drive a couple times a week. It is absolutely beautiful up here. We've really got some nice weather, I got to say. We had a little rain, but now it is beautiful and green, and that's what you love about the Hudson Valley. It's just the mountains and the streams and the green trees. It's just beautiful. So we are happy to be here.
That's why all the super rich people built their summer homes up there in the Hudson Valley in the mountains in the woods.
I know it's so true, but it's also like real, you know, farm country too. So you get, it's very, there's a lot of really normal areas as well. So you get it all. You get it all.
Because we all know the rich people area is not normal.
I know. For me, what am I speaking really about myself? I guess I don't love those areas. I like to, like up here, like, you know, you have to drive like 20 minutes to hit any sort of like chain, anything. I love that.
Yeah, you guys are pretty secluded up there. You know, it's kind of an, how did that show ever get to that particular location? It's kind of an odd spot.
Yeah, you know, it is. But, like, there's just so many barns, top barns, top horse professionals, like Olympic-level riders in this kind of 1-2 to 3 hour driving radius from here, whether it be in New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, Pennsylvania. It's kind of, it is in a way in proximity for everybody. And it, I guess, you know, the facility is so awesome. He bought it, he built it, and we came. We don't care.
Well, we were talking yesterday too. You know, you guys head to Wellington in the summertime, and then Hits heads actually to Ocala in Florida. But now there's the guy down in Wellington who has done all the building and has been fighting with the town and done had all the controversy. Bellissimo is actually building another resort we talked about in North Carolina, not too far out of Asheville. Speaking of wealthy houses, of course, the Biltmore is there. But, you know, not too far out of Asheville and Greenville, North Carolina, you have this immense facility he's building for like $100 million.
Oh, my gosh, I know, totally. It's huge, 1,400 acres, and it's going to be, I think they are going to have a hotel, a resort as well that's part of it. And that area, it really is, it's beautiful, and in a way, for the United States, it's centrally located because you can easily shoot out to Gulfport, Mississippi for the circuit there, down to Florida, you know, up to New York to the Northeast. So it is, I don't know, we're going to see. I mean, it really looks like it's poised to be big. It could really be big. It's not a place that we all go to right now. You know, it's kind of a stopping point. I actually lay over on the way from Florida to New York, about there is kind of halfway. But other than that, it's kind of like, okay, you know, hey, he's building it, we're probably going to come.
And is that going to be, is it targeted for, you know, obviously Socrates is in the summertime pretty much. And then you've got the winter down in Wellington. Is that meant to be a spring and fall kind of thing?
I think so. You know, I got to brush up on the actual details of it now that it is for sure happening. But I think that's the idea, is that it's going to be a spring fall type deal. Maybe some dates in the summer as well.
Golly. You guys ever get to take a break?
Oh, my gosh, I know. I joke. I'm like, the off season is like, I mean, there is no off season. It's like Monday.
3 days,
you know?
Of Christmas.
Yeah. You know, it's crazy. For me, Monday is my first day back at us equestrian in the morning, or, you know, for the week. So I'm like hitting the ground running Monday morning. So I don't know anything about vacations or off seasons or nothing like that.
Now, and that is something that people that aren't familiar with jumping a whole lot, Mondays has traditionally always been the day off. Because you show
holiday.
On the weekend. Yeah.
It is. Especially those top horses, you know, they work hard. And the amateur horses, too. I shouldn't say that. All of them really ramp up for the weekend. So, yeah, Monday, the horses get to rest. Tuesday's a flat day. Wednesday, the classes run.
Well, I know, judging by your Facebook post, that you have been getting your horses back to work and actually back in the competitive mode.
Oh, my gosh, I know. It's really been a trip. I think I shared with you guys earlier, the winter was so equestrian that we didn't, my husband and I didn't even renew our USCF cards, membership cards, until like a few weeks coming back up to hits. So we were like, you know, not really school, just kind of getting back into it. And they were good. All the horses were great, but it was that first horse show back. So we like, you know, you feel like you get through week three by the skin of your teeth and then rest, train. Okay, we got a nice long list of training things, but we're good. We're good.
Now, did you tell me that you're pregnant again, or rather a couple of your horses are?
I know. It is really, really exciting. This has been a passion of mine I've been studying like Looney Tune breeding for probably like 8-10 years now, and nothing, I've never bred or nothing is actualized out of it, but I've always been really, just really interested in it and studying other bloodlines and watching other people's horses and whatnot. So it just sort of happened upon me that I was just kind of like one after another started acquiring these like amazingly bred horses that weren't really totally prepared to stay in full work for various reasons, accidents as foals, whatever. And so we're here at our maiden voyage. This is season one. We've got two really nicely bred mares covered by my stallion and the third hopefully on the way. And they'll hopefully be their own little herd, two as a pair, three as a herd. So fingers crossed.
Hey, Emily's going to have a baby.
I know.
They're so cute.
How shocking.
We're in baby season here in Florida, of course. And, of course, we drive by the thoroughbred farms, and they're all the babies are out. And it's so darn cute.
Oh, I bet you guys probably just have it, like, just crazy there with all those big rolling hills. That's just got to be gorgeous.
Yeah, and you know, Kentucky, well, that was our favorite time of year, was the spring, because everywhere you drove around, you know, Lexington, was babies everywhere. So it's so cool to see the babies out there playing. They're getting to the age now where they're a couple months old, so they're starting to play a little bit now and starting to have fun. So that's kind of cool. But let's go to Jennifer and find out what is coming up on today's show.
Awesome.
On today's – am I off mute? I am off mute. On today's Jumping Tuesday edition by S Equestrian, we open with course designer Martin Otto, and then we jump in for a training tip with Monty Kelly, and after the jump-off course is reset, we get to know Paul Halpern, and for our awards presentation near the end of the show, Jennifer Blumenthal from barnmanager.com, so stay tuned for the fray, folks.
Thank you, Jennifer. Got a big show lined up, a lot of guests today. I wanted to remind everybody, if you're a fairly new listener to Horses in the Morning, Emily joins us on the first Tuesday of every month, and we do this special jumping edition where we talk all about jumping of all kinds, but especially show jumping, which is Emily's specialty. And she does follow the circuit, as you can tell, but she also has another company called S Equestrian, and she's in the apparel business as well. And what makes her company kind of unique, other than it's really nice clothes and Emily is super sweet, is that all of it is made in the United States, and she deals with craftsmen right there in the garment district of New York City, which is not something you ever get to say anymore. So I just think that's kind of cool, saying that you go to the Garment District. I don't even know the Garment District is, but it just sounds cool.
It's right by Times Square. It's right by Times
Square. Really?
You get a real collection of people, let me tell you.
I didn't know that. I always thought the Garment District would be like in the dock area or something. You know?
I was shocked, too, because I was new to it. I'm, like you said, I'm a show jumper by trade and embarked on this because I saw a need, and now it's, you know, exploded and taking most of my time. But yeah, I was like, really? Right here? Like, this is wild. It's just like, you know, four blocks south, and you just, it is an experience. It's awesome, though. It's lots of fun, and you're right. I mean, manufacturing in this country is, like, just plummeting. It's just, it's crazy. The percentages are very poor for the factories that are still open. So we're really proud. We have to, you know, pay a few extra dollars for it, but we have no intention of moving, and we love it to be right down there. It's awesome.
So it's the Apple, it's the brand new super modern Apple store, and then the Garment District.
Right. And then what it does sort of feel, it totally changes. You're just into like snap stores, trimming stores. There's all kinds of people, you know, Project Runway is shot down there. So you get like, you know, everything. I mean, Dolce & Gabbana's got an office down there. You get all different levels of fashion, and it's just all right there accessible. It's awesome. It's really cool. You get to brush shoulders with all these top designers and see top samples on other people's counters and racks. It's fun. It's really fun.
Now, you said a snap store. Is that a store that just sells snaps?
Yeah, it's crazy, man. I mean, who knew? Like, when we're trying to build these, you know, you have an idea
really?
Of what you want to build, and they're like, okay, well, pick, you know, there's 500 different shades of red. Don't just say red. You have to pick the number, you know, something like that. So then for a snap, it's like, I mean, there are just sheets and sheets and sheets and sheets of snaps.
See, when you said snap store, I thought, oh, that's some clever new fashion-y, high-tech
fashion
brand
line
that I just don't know
right.
about, and I'd better keep my mouth shut.
Oh, gosh, no, I know. There's so much material out there, and, like, the...
Is there a zipper store, too?
There is. I buy my snaps really? And zippers from different places, and then I go somewhere else that does embroidery.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Isn't that cool?
That's
retro.
It's
that is so retro. I love it.
Yeah. Hey, there's spandex stuff, too.
You came out with something that I hadn't seen before, at least, you know, from what little I know about fashion. Is this the first jacket or coat that you're coming out with?
It is. We're so excited. It, like, literally takes forever because we, as you hear, there's so many different options, and we just have to get it right, and we do test everything out there on riders, on myself. We're meticulous with it, so it takes ages. But we did finally release the jacket. It is out. I sent the first size run out to California last week. There's people wearing them, posting pictures. It is just so cool to see it. I mean, I'm sweating it when those jackets come in. I'm like, I hope the size is graded out. I hope I got the snaps right. I hope I did this right. You know, it's a lot of ifs when it's brand new, but it's being well received. So it's very exciting. All great technical properties, machine washable. So you can check with your local store, or we are selling them online.
So this is a competitive jacket that you can wash. You don't have to worry about dry cleaning and all of that stuff?
Oh, yeah. It's got all the bells and whistles, all the top shoulder fabric. It practically can't see any sweat stains. It just sort of evaporates before your eyes. It's treated with 3X dry, so you're not – it'll – if you get, like, slobber or something, you can just wipe it right off. Or if you get dirty, you can just wipe it right off. It has a cell phone pocket on the inside, which not a lot of them have. It's just so light. Everybody that tries it on is just like, it's just so light. They're just so happy with it.
And the cell phone pocket fits an actual cell phone and not the teeny-weeny flip phone like most cell phone-containing devices on clothing have. Yes.
Yeah.
It'll
actually,
fit an
now
iPhone.
That you say that, they did make it plenty big. It's not, yeah. Totally. You could even put your wallet in there.
Now, you know, the recent fashions with the jackets have been going to a much tighter, much more fitted look. Is that the case with this one?
Yeah, so the deal is because it's all technical fabric, it's extremely stretchy, it's very light, and it has all of these sweat-absorbing technical properties. So the cut is very accurate. They cut it tight, but the shape is correct. So it doesn't pull on the snaps or the seams. It holds to your shape, and then it stretches in the areas where it needs to stretch. So, like, I didn't post this picture on Facebook, but one of my riders, she tried it on. It's tight. It's perfect. She loves it. And we were like, okay, it looks like it could possibly be a little short when you get into your jumping position. Let's see. And she got into her jumping position. It didn't move an inch at all, not a centimeter, nothing up. It just, it holds in the right places and it stays. It's an athletic jacket. We keep hashtagging it fit for sport. And it is, it's a sport jacket. But it is cut, you know, for that fabric to move, it is cut tight. So it's preference.
Interesting. You know, one of the things you have to worry about is sizing, of course, and I don't know how you guys ever get that right. And there's so much fluctuation right now in sizing, whether you go from one store to the next, you know, you're going to be two or three sizes off. How do you get it right?
Oh, that's the most stressful part. I'm just sweating bullets when I go to pick up these new productions of new styles. But there's a mathematical formula that they plug in. So I'm the fit model for my size. So they take my measurements and then we grade up and grade down.
Yeah, but your size is like a half.
It's really hard. So I'll then grade up
and
then I'll try.
I mean, you're tiny, tiny.
I know. I actually, to tell you the truth, I did get fired from my own size. So I was doing the extra small fit model for about a year and the jacket when we were building the jacket. It's true. I did. I got fired. They were like, nobody's your size. So I had Ellen and a few other people come in and fix it up. And it was a little close, little tweak, and it still fits me great. But yeah, you end up doing the math. But then the hard part is this is a specific industry with sort of a demographic that we're following. So mainstream fashion grading probably doesn't work. So I make small productions. I tweak them. I love people to Facebook me, email me, call the company, let me know how it fits because we want it to be great. I mean, I tweak the men's pattern every time we go to production on certain sizes, make sure that it's great. I want people to be happy.
Yeah, because the sizing for athletic wear and the sizing for fashion wear, they don't follow the same formulas.
Right, and the fabric is different.
Yeah.
So this is so stretchy, so it does. And we're sort of only just over these last few years embarking on using all these technical fabrics so much. So people are becoming more and more educated as we go. But yeah, it does for sure make a difference. In fact, a lot of factories pick one or the other. They do athletic fabrics or they do the cotton and natural fibers.
Well, we better get on with the show. And by the way, it's sequestrian.com, right? ECEequestrian.com is the website where you can find it all. And Jennifer will post a link on Facebook as well. But we got to start getting to our guests because you have so many booked for today. Yesterday, it was fun because I did this interview with you and we talked to Germany and Martin's in Germany and you'll introduce him here in a second. And then I did a couple listener highlights of listeners for the driving radio show that were in Italy who listened to our show. They listened to our show on the way to the barn, the driving radio show. So it was International Day here at the Horse Radio Network yesterday. But tell us about
awesome.
Our German guest. Yeah, it was fun. It was a lot of fun.
That's so cool. Okay, so this was so great that we're able to hook up here with Martin Otto. He works for the German Equestrian Federation in Warendorf, which is the Olympic training facility. He is responsible for the consulting and development of horse farms and equestrian clubs, which, as you know, some of you know that they do have a certification program implemented over there. It's really serious. So he is in charge of a lot of the development of that. And he is a level 3 FEI course designer, builds the biggest, best courses all over the world, the 4-star in Munster, the 5-star in Monaco, and the Young Horse Championships in Warendorf. So he's got some great info. Let's hear from him.
All right. The sound here was we recorded this yesterday, and he was on Skype, and his mic was not the best, but you will understand him. I think it's understandable. So let's take a listen.
Okay. Hey, Martin, welcome, and thank you for joining us. We're so happy to have you.
Yeah, great to be here. Thank you for asking me.
Oh, it's super. We actually ran into Martin this year at HITS Saugerties. We were so lucky to ride your courses again, which was awesome. You do come to the States a few times a year, is that right?
Yeah, that's definitely right. And we're coming to the States for 3 times a year this year.
And those times, are they all at HITS locations?
Till now, that's all HITS locations, yes. He has a reservation for my courses.
So we're quite spoiled here because we ride at mainly Hits Horse shows. So before I read your bio, I didn't actually know that, that we're so lucky because you build the biggest and best courses in the world, and we get you right here at Saugerties and Thermal in Ocala. It's awesome.
To come over there to the States and be able to be invited by the organizer. It's wonderful.
It is. It's great. And they're big rings. They're fun to build and fun to ride in. So that was super that we got to meet you and hook up and get to know a little bit more about you. I did get your bio. It's very, very impressive, I have to say. You are the master of organization for the German Equestrian Federation.
Yeah, I'm part of the management of the German Equestrian Federation. Only a small part, but a wheel in the whole system.
It's really unbelievable. As I shared with you, I had a little experience going over and riding Invicta for two summers and trying to work my way through the very intense program there. And, I mean, it's unbelievable. It's so organized and it's so specialized. And we had textbooks and classrooms. I mean, people in the States, I don't think, really understand. Maybe we could start with that. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about the certification program over there in Germany and how successful it's been.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think it's, as you said, it's a typical German. It's a little bit overdone and a little bit overorganized, but it's a fully developed system, and we had really good experiences in this. So, first of all, I think especially show jumping isn't that different than in the States. It's, in the end, it's the same horses jump over fences. But on the other hand, we have a little more developed, detailed systems for the education of the riders. And for the examinations, you need to pass to take part in the toe jumping competition.
Yeah, and it is, and it's sort of, I guess what struck me, it was very well-rounded. You know, in the States, we start in a, you know, whatever riding school you go to, you pick. Do you do show jumping, you do dressage, you do eventing, you know, whatever, but you pick. And in Germany, it was fascinating that the riders, I mean, they cross-trained. You did dressage and the jumping and the theory and lunging. Lunging was a course. It seemed very, it just was more well-rounded, I guess.
Yeah, I think in the basic of our sport, it's really important for all the riders that they got a multiple education and a multiple development, not only for a single kind of riding, but then for all kind of riding. And dressage is the most necessary thing for everything in our sport, as well as for show jumping. Without dressage, you can't do nothing. And so it's the basic. And this basic needs to be trained. And we want to take care and to ensure that competitors are qualified enough to handle the level of difficulties in the respective club they want to go to. And so in the beginning, they first of all do need to pass some examination. And with the first examination, they pass, they are allowed to take part, you know, comparing to the state system in level 0 or level 1. Then they need to pass another examination also, not only in show jumping, but as well as in dressage and in theory and longing. And from then on, they can develop when they are taking successful part in the competition. They are allowed to take part in a higher competition. Without success in for example, level 2 competition, you are not allowed to take part in a level 3 competition.
I love that. That part of it, the whole experience, it was so new to me, having been competing, you know, young riders and all of this as a junior, and then as a young adult, I went to Germany and I learned of the system, and that is fantastic. I think that's a recipe for success. They're building blocks, and you master a level, and then you move up, and for sure, simultaneously riding the dressage, that was brand new to me, but oh my gosh, it totally changed my riding. We need more of that.
Yeah.
In our textbook, I thought this is sort of one funny thing I share with my American rider friends to give them the idea of how important dressage is to the Germans is I believe most of the jumping pages in my textbook were pictures of jumps in reference to different kinds of obstacles. And you take that flat work, you ride your flat work between the obstacles.
Yeah, you need the flat. Without the flat, nothing would work.
And you know what was really interesting, too, is like I said, we went over there to take the courses, and we pulled a group together of us that went. I was a show jumping rider, but a few of the people that we brought were primarily dressage riders in the States, so they had the opposite experience that I did. They had to try out jumping. And, I mean, it was like a case study in, you know, how important the flat work is. Those dressage riders, they just hopped on, and they just took to it right away. They had beautiful canter. The horses didn't stop or, you know, have misjudged steps or anything. And then, you know, all of us jumping riders suffering through trot transitions and not riding in straight lines, I mean, it was horrendous. They were just like, oh, my gosh, you ride courses?
Yeah, but it's really funny when you tell the story a couple of years ago when they changed the route. I think it's 15 or 20 years ago. The dressage riders, also in Germany, I didn't know how it has been in the international system, but in Germany they needed to do a fence when they finished their dressage.
Really?
Without doing the fence, they wouldn't have been able to get a ribbon as well in the dressage.
Wow. That's really interesting.
Yeah, but it was really fine, but they changed it, and I think I can't remember that it has been done. So it's 15 or 20 years ago.
So you experienced that a little bit as well, that there is a separation between the disciplines.
Yeah, but I think it's not good. It's, when you get on the higher levels, okay, you can specialize for one discipline. But in the basic, you need to develop in both or in more than two disciplines, also in cross-country, for example, to get your balance as a rider, to get your knowledge how to flat your horse. And it's so important to do all those disciplines at once when you get a better rider for the higher level.
Yeah, that's really great to hear. That's good confirmation because, you know, as you know, we're trying to build the trainer certification program in the States. They have a few different ideas, you know, as they're developing it. But I champion that idea, I think, for sure, that we need to bring back the flat work. We need to emphasize it. And in that way, like you're saying, call it dressage, call it cross country, actually partake in those training sessions and events. And you will become a better rider, which is ultimately what we're doing. We're developing, you know, the craft of show jumping here, and it takes all of those aspects.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, that's really good. I love hearing about that. Yeah, all that. It's confirmation. It's what we're all going through, really, in this country right now. So cool. All right. Well, let's maybe move on to our next topic, which is of interest here. As many of you know, I'm passionate about young jumpers. I love young jumpers. We have a young jumper program here in the States, but you are awesome to talk to because you built the Young Jumper Championships 2013 in Warendorf. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. We are a team of two course designers during the last year, and we mostly do bigger shows here all in Europe or as well in Germany in a team. It's much better for the work, and you can discuss courses, and when you can work in a team, it only gets better. So I'm part of this team with a good friend of mine, and we are doing this since, I think, 2011.
Wow. So I mean, young jumpers, you all take young jumpers very seriously. Is that safe to say?
Yes, absolutely. Sure. You're definitely right. I think it's this is the biggest difference between the show jumping competitions, as far as I've seen over there in the States, comparing here to Europe or especially to Germany. We have, in every single show, we have a minimum of two or three classes for young horses. And you need to remind that mostly we have only one ring, and the shows are only done for one weekend or for 4 or 5 days. But there are, in the end, there are a minimum of three or four classes for young horses. And we start with the development up from 4 years to 5 years and 6 years, all horses only going by themselves, but are not going for time allowed or something like this. They are going for style, like in an equitation.
Oh, nice. Nice, nice. I didn't realize that's very important. That is a huge difference.
Yeah, amazing difference. Okay, I think for 6 years or 6 years or off, you should be able to go competition against the clock or with jump off or something like two faces or anything else. But a 4 years old or a 5 years old horse, why do they need to go against the clock? There is no reason, and they should develop and they should learn and they should get confidence for the next show and develop for the bigger path. And you can best develop them when there is no pressure against the time or no pressure for the class. So they've only got the fences and dividing lines, and they should learn and develop, nothing else, nothing wrong.
That is very, very monumental, really. That is a huge difference. I didn't realize all that, and it makes so much sense. In fact, I'm guilty of going in the ring and losing, you know, getting time faults just because it was the best thing I thought for the horse. But you're confirming that, absolutely, developing these horses. So just sort of the flip side for us here in the States, for example, the big show in Wellington, this is a huge show. Top horses are coming from all over. The young jumper classes, of course, they run. The circuit is over in March, and at the end of our March circuit in Florida, they make the young jumpers do a young jumper finale, and they jump at the top of the specs in the Grand Prix ring, which they have not been showing in all the time, really hard courses, and that's like 2 months before the specs are supposed to change, and it's sad out there. I go watch because, like I said, I love young jumpers, and it's like a bloodbath out there. I mean, they get out there and they're not ready, and people are building to impress. They're not building to build these horses' confidence, like you're saying. It's not good. I mean, what is your thought on that?
Ooh, I don't know about this. I know Wellington. I have never been there before, but I think they exactly know what they want to do. But if I would compare this against Germany, we have got those whole classes for young horses during the whole season from January to October or November, and all over the year, these are mostly, in my opinion, presentation of the horses, and we want to develop them. We want to show the best, to show the best sport in its beautiful way, as well with the young horses, and so it makes no, my opinion, okay, it's different to bring them to a big ring or to a Grand Prix ring, but then I think the best way would have been if they had been inside this ring before as well.
Yeah. Yeah, really, it sounds like there's a lot of thought in the development of these horses in their most crucial years, 4, 5, 6, in the German system, the way that you build, the way that the timers are, I mean, all of it is, it's an entirely different focus. You can imagine here, you've got, a sponsor, you've got some top young jumpers. I mean, you've got to get out there and win some classes. I mean, to get into finals, you need to win some classes. So it's against the clock and you're out there, and these guys are running around, 5 years old, 6 years old. I mean, they're out there, they're riding hard.
Okay, these are different starting points and different points of view. So I would need to know the complex situation over there in the States, and I didn't know about this. But I think in the end, these are only two completely different starting points, but they have all got the same aim. To
right.
Do well for horses, and I don't know. I know a couple of young horses developing here over there in Germany and remaining in the sport and going up to get a Grand Prix horse. But I can't say this to any horse over there in the States, so I couldn't compare it.
Yeah. Well, your point of view is for the people here who are experiencing it and living it. It's, the comparison is there to see. They're seeing it, so it's incredibly helpful. Okay, so we're running out of time. We're getting tons of great info here. I want to squeeze one more important question from you, Martin. I want to know, the people want to know, when you're coming to the States to build under our USCF rules, we do not have the FEI star system. It is hard to decide what level class each class is. How do you decide how hard to build each class?
We have also got the systems with a fixed height and the scale, and you have a big help in your USEF rules regarding the standards of Grand Prix. So that needs to be fixed what high and what number of obstacles are in a Prix. And so you have got a first line or a first half when you come over there. And then you need to look to take care about the riders and the horses, how they develop from day to day and how they show from day to day. And depending to this, you can go and set up a pre.
So you really have to, as the course designer, it's your responsibility to build for the crowd, whereas FEI, it's determined by the number of stars.
Sorry?
For FEI, it's determined by the number of stars. It tells you, correct, what level to build the competition at?
Yeah, for sure. But it's also fixed in the prize list of the FEI shows. There are also different classes and different heights. And the star system of the FEI, on the one hand, belongs to the high. On the other hand, it belongs to the prize money of the show.
Okay.
And so the heights are written down in the prize list.
Okay. Interesting. Cool. Well, this is really, really great info. I appreciate it so much, Martin. You've just got an awesome perspective and coming from a proven system. So I thank you for your time, and we hope to see you soon back here at HIPS.
I hope to see you soon as well. Thanks a lot for your invitation.
Well, that was Martin Otto all the way from Germany. Thank you, Emily, for putting that together. And I know you spent some time over there, and you have a soft spot in your heart for Germany, not just for the sausages, but also for the jumping.
It's true. No, that was great. Martin's so good. It's so much fun. It's so good to hear. He's got so much info. So that was great. It worked out.
We'll catch up with him, too, when he heads over here. I'm sure he'll be over to Florida at some point over the winter, so we'll try and catch up with him then.
Yeah, perfect.
Well, we have more guests coming up, training tips on the way, and some other guests down the line as well. But first, we wanted to do a song for you today. It's our daily song, and I thought what was more appropriate than Jared Rogerson singing Riding Wild Ponies, because I know Emily does that almost every day. So,
it's true.
We'll
that's
right
appropriate.
Driving all around. all around the world. Another half a million miles around the world.
Well, that was Riding Wild Ponies by Jared Rogerson. Used to do the wild ponies in the rodeo circuit for a long time and chased wild girls for a long time, too, but apparently doesn't do that anymore because he got married about 2 years ago and had a kid. So I don't think he's chasing the girls anymore. But
important
you're listening
to give that shout-out, yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify that. He's a good-looking guy, too. Jamie just loves him. We are here at Horses in the Morning. You're listening to Glenn the Geek, and we have Emily with us on the monthly jumping episode, and Coach Jen is in the producer chair. And we are brought to you today by S Equestrian. That's ECEEquestrian.com. All right, Em, it's next guest.
So next guest, we have one of my favorite people, Monty Kelly from Stepping Stone Farm, who we're so happy took the time out to give us another training tip because he's been very busy. I keep seeing him at different horse shows all over. I don't think he's had a week off. So, Monty, are you there?
I am, Emily. How are you? Good morning.
Good. How are you? I just saw you last week. That was fun up at Saratoga.
Yes. Yes. It's a beautiful
place.
Nice
show. It is, it is, but it's really, it's hard when it rains, I'll say that. It was not raining when I was there, and it looked gorgeous.
Right, right. It was beautiful.
Man, well, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us. I know you're so busy, but what do you have for us today, a training tip?
Today, you know, I want to talk about position. I know everyone gets yelled at about their position, but the biggest thing about the position is I want people to realize it's about making your horse comfortable, not uncomfortable. Okay, and a little bit of an idea that you can make yourself more comfortable and work on your position without wearing your horse out is cantering over poles on the ground, doing like a straight line of two poles, five strides apart, and maybe doing a bending six or a collected straight six. There's tons of options you can do there, and you can work on your lower leg position, your hand position, taking off from a bigger distance at just a simple pole on the ground.
Oh, I like that. That's really good. I agree with you. I think that's what's missing a lot is in our program is really the emphasis on that position and why. And you're pointing it out exactly. It's for the horses.
Right, and that's the biggest
thing,
too, because I deal with some kids that they're like, oh, I don't care about equitation. I don't care about this. It's really about making you and your horse comfortable together. That's what
equitation is. That's a really good point. That's so true. Exactly. And the point, I mean, like, you've got top horses going. Your Stepping Stone business is very interesting to me because you guys have a large business, quite a few professional riders riding, and you've got lots of kids doing the equitation, but then you've also got quite a few top jumpers. And, you know, the girls that ride those top jumpers, they have a great position, and it's effective, and you can see at work there why it's effective. It's because it's for big jumps, and I think that's what you're saying really is that yes, the position is to affect change in your horse so that it can do a better job over a higher level, right?
Yes, and I think with any horse that's comfortable is going to do more for you, and that's what we want the equitation to be, is to make the horse comfortable.
That's so great. And then that's the stepping stone for these kids, pardon the pun, to go from the lower level jumps to the bigger jumps and keep that equitation. The equitation is not just some class and some back ring until you're 18. It is to groom you for a higher level job.
Yes.
I love that. That's a good one. I like that. Pole work for the position, less wear and tear on the horse, and can really get you in shape. What do you think about no stirrups? Do you think that's something good for the position?
I love the no stirrups. Just make sure you don't overdo your horse.
Yeah.
I love.
So you got to be really mindful.
Yes.
Nice.
Yes.
I like that. That is a good one, Monty. Thank you for that training tip.
You're very welcome, Emily. Thank you very much for having me on.
Well, we'll have you on, no doubt, at a later date, and we'll see you soon.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, talk to you soon, Monty. Thanks.
Yep.
Now, was the show he was talking about in Saratoga, was it up near the race course? Was it in the
It is right
same
there.
Area?
I thought of you when I went up there. I know you guys wanted to go. You got to come up sometime. It's right there at the track. It is the cutest little town.
Yeah, it's supposed to be. It is supposed to be so neat. Now, did you get to go to the races while you were there?
No, I didn't. I was just like, honestly, I had to run up and do a shirt delivery for S Equestrian, and I was like, well, I have to basically do this, like, just turnaround trip. So I tried to time it so I could pop up and see the Grand Prix on Sunday, which we did, which one of our riders won. Todd Minicus, S Equestrian rider, won the Grand Prix. It was so funny. We walked in, like, as they were, like, about to start the jump off, and there were only two horses in it, and he won it. We're like, that was awesome. Great timing. All right, back in the car. So it was a quick one, but I do love it. We'll go up there with horses at some point. It's just a fun show. It's just so beautiful, and that's horse country. That's real horses up there with the track.
So I have a training question for you. If you're a new rider, not even necessarily a new rider, but you're new to jumping and you're just coming into this, and we have a lot of people who don't have regular trainers who are just doing these things kind of on their own. How often do you recommend, if you're doing your jumping training, how often will you jump your horses in a week, and how often do you do rails or flat classes or, you know, things like that? How often will you do the jumping every week? Is it,
you know what, a little bit to like what Monty said, you really need to assess each horse as an individual. The equitation sounds like a very selfish thing. We're just working on our position, but our position is for the horse so that they can perform better. So each horse is different. Some of them can do little poles and little cross rails, you know, 3-4 times a week. With at least one day off, you know, you want to let them have a day of rest and a few stretching loose days. But then some of them can really only handle two. What you want to watch out for is the kind of horse, because essentially jumping, pole work, any of that kind of work is compressing your horse's form. So they're sort of, you know, in a state of collection at times, leaving the ground, they're exerting themselves. So you really want to have days of stretching in between. So some horses are really hot and get excited about the jumping, and their bodies get tight and they get short and they're up and down and the poles make them hot. And so, you know, that's got to go do fewer sessions with that horse to preserve its looseness. Whereas a horse that's naturally like a little bit casual and lazy, you can probably do more days, but you listen to your horse. You want your horse to remain supple, always supple and happy to do their job.
Now you know, at least professional riders will ride a lot of horses. I was always curious how they keep track. Do they just keep track mentally of what they've done with these horses, or do they actually keep diaries and logs?
You know what? You see both. I've personally done both. People encourage you to keep a journal. You know, it's hard when people have so many, horses in their care. They just sort of like, you know, I think they just turn the gears, but I found it tremendously helpful to keep a log, a diary of your work. And if you just have one horse, I mean, you definitely should, because you will pick up consistencies. You'll pick up things. You'll see similarities in training sessions or pick up on things, connect a few dots. You know, horses are kind of like a puzzle. You've got to put them together and they're individuals. So, I would encourage it. It sounds a little nerdy, but I think that it is definitely beneficial. So I think, you know, for me, honestly, I did it even more so. We had, gosh, at one point, we had like 13 horses in training. I had breeding horses going, young horses going, and then older horses that were showing. So I think at a big business like that, it is also beneficial if you can do it, because you've got horses on totally different programs. And essentially that's the deal when you're keeping a diary, is you're trying to figure out what is the program for this horse. They've all got a little bit something different that makes them tick. Yeah. Like we just talked about, you know, you've got a hot horse versus a cold horse. Well, you know, you need to have a program that suits that horse. If you have a horse that gets a little bit ready when you jump it, or you're practicing cross rails and things like that, then, you know, maybe you need to tailor your program and you need to do more loose work, cross training, you know, like Martin was talking about in Germany, the horses and the people all do cross training. They do, you know, the eventing, which is real forward and bold, to the show jumping, which can be quite careful, to the dressage, which is so specialized. So I think that if you are going to own a horse, you're a steward to that animal, and you should try to keep track of what kind of horse it is and how you're going to develop it and what you want to do with it and suppleness. I just think horses should be supple. They shouldn't be suffering out there.
And I found that the most interesting when you were talking to Martin about how they do the cross training, how the jumpers all do dressage, and the dressage riders are required to do a jump at the end of each course. And I thought that was very interesting.
Right. And, I had heard, I don't know if they still do it, that confirms something else I'd heard way back when I was there, is that they take the young dressage horses to when they are presenting them. You know, you have to declare whether you're presenting a jumping horse or dressage horse as 3- and 4-year-olds, 2-, 3-, 4-year-olds, and then the approval, goes one way or the other. But they made those dressage horses jump up to like 125 or so through the chute.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And we're not doing that here.
It makes me wonder, too, when you take a look at dressage obviously was taken after, it was designed as kind of the war thing years ago. They had to do jumping back then. I mean, it was part of what you had to do. At some point they got separated and became two completely different things.
Yep, and I think we're suffering a little bit for it. So we're raising awareness. That's what we're doing.
Well, your next guest is ready.
Yay! Okay, so we have here awesome rider, great guy, somebody we've got to know over the last couple of years, Paul Halpern. Paul, are you there?
I'm here. How are you?
Hey, good. How are you? Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
I know you're busy. You're at the barn, right?
Correct. Riding right in this boiling, sweltering heat, the northeast heat.
Oh, my gosh. Glenn's in Florida. Better cool it.
Yeah.
Glenn's really sweating.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It started to get warm here now. So, yeah.
Oh, I can imagine.
Finally.
I can imagine.
You know what?
Oh,
we lived
gosh.
In Pennsylvania for a long time, though, Paul. And it's every bit as humid and hot up there in the Northeast. We lived in Massachusetts for a while, too. It still gets hot and humid up there.
Exactly. That's the way I feel. Yeah.
No, it does. And for sure when you're out working, which Paul is a incredibly credentialed show jumping rider. I mean, tremendous bio, grew up in Canada, been in Europe, had jobs all over, had his own business. And right now he's got such a sweet deal and is doing an amazing job with it. So Paul, you're riding all of the K-Mines horses, which have been bred inside their own program, quite a few of them. The K-Mines, for those of you who don't know, owned the Athens Silver Medal Champion, Royal Caliber, got a lot of press, an amazing horse with Chris Kapler. So please tell us a little bit about that. We're passionate about young jumpers here. That's all we're talking about, young horses. Tell us, what are you doing these days? And enlighten us on the struggles with developing these young horses in this American system.
Well, you boasted I'm riding for the K-Mine thing. They have a large group of horses. There's probably, about 30 horses on the farm ranging from, I guess right now, 4 years old all the way up to retired horses. But there's about 15 in work of all ages, shapes, and sizes. But the lucky thing is they're all extremely well-bred. Both mother and father have international show jumping experience. Previous to owning Royal Caliber for Chris Kapler, they owned Rhythmical for Noah Larson. So they've actually been to the Olympics 2 times as owners, which is quite rare. And they owned a significant amount of other fantastic horses. And a lot of those are still broodmares that are here, 30-some-odd years old, enjoying life. So I'm riding their, most of their things. So I'm lucky that I've got a group of young horses. And in breeding, it's a bit of a numbers game. It's statistics, and you breed X amount of horses to top bloodline.
Paul?
Yep.
Paul, I don't want to cut you off. Just wherever you are, you're breaking up just a little bit.
Okay. Let me move. I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. I know you warned me. Paul is a hardworking man at the barn. He is finding success.
Yeah, and our reception gets a little spotty. Is this better over here?
That does sound a little better, actually.
Okay. I'll try not to move at all.
Okay.
Anyway, what I
you.
Was saying is breeding is so much of a numbers game. You're going to breed X amount of horses, and no matter what, you're only going to get a few top-quality horses. It's just odds. So we put ourselves in an advantage, at least by having top top, you know, bloodlines, similar to the way they would do in Europe. It's not as much of a passion thing, saying, you know, I loved my my junior hunter, and he was so cute, so we're going to breed her because this and that stallion is so cute. It, we've done it with, or I shouldn't say we, but the Kmart family have done it with some really nice bloodlines. So I'm lucky enough to deal with it that way. Yeah, you know, I would say it's kind of unfair to compare North American system to the European system because it's comparing apples and oranges. First of all, Europe has had hundreds of years ahead of us. You know, we're so much more behind them in the actual breeding of show jumping and part of the culture. It's very much a part of the culture over there where it's not as much here. So, you know, I think it's not necessary to necessarily compare Europe to North America, but we can learn from them and then use their strengths and forget about the weaknesses. Generally, the main thing with the young horses is the way our horse shows are is you have everything from your meter 60 jumpers to your 0.80 jumpers all combined in the same horse show. So it's not, you're not necessarily gearing to each individual age group. And what ends up happening usually, let's say if a six-year-old is supposed to jump a meter 20, well, they're kind of clunked in at the same time frame as your low amateur class. So they end up jumping about the same type of track because the height is the same, which I think that's one of the main flaws that we have because, as we all agree, your low amateur horse is going to be far more sophisticated than your six-year-old horse. And so the sophisticated horse is going to need a much more sophisticated course to, you know, so the course is going to make sure that they have one down here, you know, that not everybody jumps clean. But the way our schedule is always, the course designer is going to design a course that's fit for the day and then work around it. So I find a lot of the times we actually end up dummying the courses down in height because physicality is a little bit more than a young horse should be dealing with. And I personally think, okay, by the time they're 7 and 8, that's a little bit different. But in the beginning, when they're 5 and 6, or especially 4, they should be jumping their proper height or gearing towards it. But the design of the course should be a lot more welcoming than what we see. And that can mean, you know, whether it's the triple away in gate at number 4 versus putting the triple towards the ingate at number 5, or using the spooky material on the single jumps in the beginning, not in a double, or putting the Liverpool in a straight line as opposed to a bending line. Little things like that I feel that we don't spend enough attention on, but in the same sense we end up making the jumps a little bit too small because we need to make sure, you know, there's nobody crashing and burning. But then we're kind of giving ourselves a disadvantage because we should be teaching these horses our whole young horse program. We want to be developing Grand Prix horses is the goal. So we should be still jumping the proper height but giving them a positive experience as far as the track. That's my main one.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I see that out there. And like I shared earlier, we are doing a bit of breeding ourselves, fingers crossed. And so this is a real concern, a real, you know, attention spot of ours is on the young jumper market here in the States, just the development rather, sort of how we're doing this. And you know, what I said to Martin when I was talking with him that really came to mind was that young jumper finale that we have in Wellington, how we really call these horses, you know, by what you just said, if we're actually under preparing them and then we call them to jump higher than the specs too early in the year on a 5 or a 6-year-old, I mean, this is a big deal, right?
Yeah, but I mean, that's somebody's personal decision. I mean, that young horse class in Wellington, there's no one forcing you to enter it. You know, so it's not like it's the final for the year. It's a horse show final. It's not regulated by the country. The horse show is doing it. So I do praise them for at least putting $20,000 for each age group. And then what happens is you get 100 people or, you know, however many in each age group, like a lot. So the course designer has to make it quite difficult. And, you know, if you have a future Grand Prix horse that we really believe is going to be a Grand Prix horse, most of them are going to have no problem guiding around the track in Wellington. Having done it for umpteen years myself, it's the ones that are already shown to be first have no problem doing it. The ones that aren't ready have a significantly hard time doing it. And then your unique type horses, I've known many, many horses in my life that are later bloomers and later developers. So if that's the case, it's up to the rider, trainer, owner, whoever, the manager, but the whole program to decide is horse ready for it or not. I wouldn't, you know, some horses are going to be ready for it and others aren't going to be. But a lot of people, they make that their goal, so they'll enter the horse just because the class is available, even in not looking at the horses individually.
Yeah, and I guess that's the thing. You know, it's sort of the whole, because as riders, breeders, trainers, as the people who are competing, you, I think, look at those young jumper classes and use that as the markers. So you say, well, my horse is 5 years old. He should be doing the five-year-olds. And, I mean, I haven't done as many as you, but the ones that I've done, a pretty decent percentage of them are not ready for their five-year-old year. Would you say so?
Absolutely. Oh, 100%. 100%. And if that's the case, you know, not just because we offer the young horse divisions, not every horse needs to do them. You know, we can think of many horses throughout our time that were really not superstars at 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, and then by the time they're 12 years old, they're exceptional. So I think it's a little bit horse-specific, and we as riders and trainers really need to listen to our horses, and our horses will tell us if they're ready or not. If we try to dictate it to them, well, that's the beginning of the problem.
This is very, very interesting conversation for me because I get to sit behind the scenes here and listen for the most part. But this is a conversation that is not specific to the jumper world. The same conversation happens in racing. It's happening right now in eventing where we're calling on horsemen to be better horsemen when it comes to moving both horses and riders up through the levels. Don't move them up through the levels just because the rider wants to for his own competitive desires or because we can in the case of the five-year-old classes that we're talking about here. And it's fascinating to me that so many different disciplines are having this same conversation at the same point in time. I think it speaks a little bit to the culture of equestrianism in the United States right now that we're going, wake up call, we need to adjust a little bit.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
I agree. There needs to be, you know, I was at one of the premier horse shows in the Northeast just a couple of weeks ago, and the course designer came up to me, who was also from Germany, and this wasn't who we were speaking with from Socrates, but another show, a very good course designer, and he said, "Geez, Paul, you know, how do I build the young horses here?" And I said, "What do you mean? You can't follow the specs?" And he says, "No, well, anytime I follow the specs, everyone comes and complains and this or that, and everyone, you know, there isn't an exact guideline that we follow." And it was funny that the course designer was asking me exactly what do we do when it should be more of a standard. And I'll take a quick story, but at the finals in the Northeast, so in America there's, they break it up into sections, but the Northeast, the finals, it's in a big grass field. It's a very impressive field. And just out of experience for the past couple of years, even at the six-year-old stage, the final day, they're qualified by jumping in the D ring, in the sand ring, and then they only go in the main ring on the final class, which already is giving them a little bit of a disadvantage and not necessarily preparing them, but they have to jump the open water, which I really believe is very, very necessary. Any good six-year-old that's going to be a future Grand Prix horse, if he's already having an open water issue at that point, the training wasn't done properly, the homework, or, you know, whatever it is, but those things need to start to be resolved at that age. But what I noticed is throughout the year, I pretty much say I never, maybe not too strong a word, but almost never see the open water in the young horse division, either as an option or there. And in the past couple of years when I go to the Hamptons, I remember maybe 2 years ago, I want to say at least 40% of the six-year-old class in the final day was eliminated at the water. Now, that was, in my opinion, not fair to the horses because it's one of the most daunting, difficult waters in the country anyway, and they're not being presented properly. So instead of building our horses and giving them an advantage and building them to be great, we're, you know, making a problem right off the get-go because throughout the year, most of the times, obviously there's an exception to everything, just generalizing, but most of the time, that's just an example of something that we don't use in training enough. And
well, you know, Paul, though, you know what, Paul, though, it's great for the spectators.
Yeah.
They love it.
Yeah, that's right.
Especially the NASCAR spectators. Yeah.
But then here's the problem. The finals, so the young horses should be a great deal, but the finals for the whole Northeast, they put the final class on Friday morning when there is not a single spectator in the crowds. And I can tell you, when I lived in Switzerland in 99, I did the young horse finals, and I was amazed that the final day, it's a sold-out crowd as if you're at the World Cup finals. There is people at the stands trying to buy your horses. Every country's the same way. The following year, I did it in Holland. And then, as an example, go to the World Young Horse Championships in Lanark and in Belgium, so that's the best young horses in the world. Frenzy you for people looking at the top horses. It's one of the most sought-after horses from the top riders in the world. You could take the top riders on the pewter ranking list, and they're all there watching and
wow.
You know, trying to pick the best horses. And, you know, what's amazing is over there, in general, I would say there's a little bit more loyalty on the owner's part in the developing of the horses. They'll leave their horses with certain people to allow them to develop it and jump double clean rounds. So if I'm competing in a class and I'm going against McLean Ward and Ken Farrington and whoever, obviously, without a doubt, my odds are going to be less because of who they are. But if I jump double clean and I'm fourth and playing wins, he's first, to anyone that's an educated person and knows the field, they're going to be just as happy with my horse at fourth as opposed to first. And in our country a little bit, we like a little bit more instant gratification. And if you there's a winner and then there's everybody else. But we need to, you know, look a little bit more down the list and we say, okay, well, you know, so-and-so is not a double gold medalist, is not the one of the best riders in the world, but just went and jumped triple clean on his horse and he was fifth. And, you know, that's still just as rewarding as McLean Ward being first, if you understand what I mean. And we don't necessarily keep loyal to our up-and-coming, not necessarily young riders, but your non-superstars, if you understand what I mean.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And that leads me to another question is how much do you get any pressure? And I don't know the answer to this. Do you get any pressure from the owners to advance if you're not advancing fast enough? Are they moving the horses? Is that a problem or is that something that they're pretty good about?
I guess that's owner specific. You know, I am very lucky. I have fantastic owners. You know, they want to see their horses do the best they can and obviously pressure them, but without over-pressuring them. But in my, I mean, I've been doing this for a long time now, and a lot of times, I don't know, whether it's I'm correct or not, I'm not sure, but I feel that you see it out there, their owners don't stay with their riders as long as they do in Europe. And as soon as they hit a little bit of a problem, then they're quick to, you know, maybe, oh, shucks, maybe we should send the horse to BZ or we should this or that or however it goes. But the whole thing, what we're missing is, you know, training comes from experiences in the young horse. And when you make mistakes, that's the best way to learn. You know, I had a boss or a trainer once tell me that good judgment comes from bad judgment. Judgment comes from experience. So if we're
God,
looking
I should
at the whole,
man, I should be an expert at everything by now.
I know, right? Me too, man. I'm just blundering through life.
Exactly. You know, and then, you know, we kind of, same thing, it ends up, we shoot ourselves in the foot a little bit because the right there, the building blocks all of a sudden start to tumble a little bit, you know, because whether there isn't a, you know, there needs to be perseverance about the whole thing, but it needs to be patiently persevered, if you understand what I mean. And we all know horses, we've got to be extremely patient. I mean, if you're working with horses and you're not patient with them, well, you might as well not be working with horses. You know that.
Yeah. No, it's so true, and it does bring up sort of our system here with these young jumpers. This is the foundation of our top sport horses. These are tomorrow's Olympic winners. We hope we're developing them and breeding them in this country. We hope that that's what we're doing, and I think we're highlighting a few issues here where horses are getting pushed beyond where they're ready. We're having them compete, you know, against the clock, the water. All of these are real issues, and they need to be looked at because this is our tomorrow, you know, that we're talking about.
Yep. And it should be a premier event or show. I mean, so many times I call them just filler classes. You know, it's they're just kind of thrown in when the schedule works. And you know, there isn't. And when I first got on the show, I heard you guys talking about dressage and this and that. But we do forget, and whether how true this is or not. But what I always understood is the word dressage is a French word that means training, to train. So dressage is the basis for all the disciplines, especially show jumping, or not especially, but these horses really have to be trained properly. And that's what dressage is the basics and all of that. And we get kind of confused because our influence with the hunters in North America, you know, I believe a four-year-old or five-year-old course should be maybe as simple as a hunter course, but it should be ridden more as a jumper. You know, there should be more connection from the back end to the front end. You know, you should be, yes, connected and going around. And the material needs to, you know, the hunter jumps are a lot easier, which is good, but then it almost gives a false impression to the horses. So if you start them in the hunters, which, you know, there's always big, big ground line, they're all ramp yorkers, this and that, then when they get to, you know, their first square ox or this and that, it can be a little bit of a trap. So, you know,
I think we're missing
that dressage, and there could be dressage in jumping. Dressage doesn't mean that you're now going practicing pirouettes and tempis down the center line. It can be your basic rhythm, the following of the gates, the opening and closing the strides. Oh, yeah. That's what dressage is to me. And we tend to forget about that a little bit.
You know what? Paul, you are going to come on with our training tips next time.
Okay.
I've had a vision. You have info. I love it because we need it. We need development. So we're actually out of time, so we got to go. But we're going to catch back up with you. This was so incredibly informative and helpful. And you're booked, man. We want a training tip. So we're going to catch back up with you.
Okay, super. Well, thank you for having me.
Thank you, Paul.
All right,
interesting.
Thanks, Paul. We'll talk to you soon.
All right.
That is very interesting, and Jennifer is right. It's something that we hear on the show all the time because we cover so many different disciplines, but it's it's an issue that is coming up across the board. It's something that all the different disciplines, from reining to dressage to racing especially, of course, has always been a conversation in racing.
Wow. Well, we're here all together then. It's young horse development. There's the focus, which is riders
and
trainers.
Well, and you know what? If we're ever going to be competitive anywhere in the world with any of our disciplines to the degree that the British are and the Germans are and the Dutch are, we're going to have to get that young horse development program better, or it's not going to happen.
And we're breeding them here, so we owe it to these animals that we're creating and breeding here in this country to have a proper young horse system, because previously we had been buying them already pre-made, and now we're breeding. It's kind of catching on. People are breeding, so let's sort it out, people.
Well, you know, earlier in the show I asked you how you keep track of all the horses that you're training, and, there is technology now to help us with some of the issues that we deal with as barn owners and barn managers and that kind of thing. And I think you have a guest coming up that's going to help us with that.
We do. Yeah, I'm so excited that we're able to book Jenny from barnmanager.com. This is such a cool company. It's an amazing tool. It is multidiscipline. It is great for everybody. And you're right, it is actually sort of the little cherry on top of all the things we've been discussing. We're going to hear about it, but this is how you get that organization down and afford yourself the time to put the energy back into the horses. So, Jenny, are you there?
I'm here.
It's so good to hear you. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm so excited.
This is so great. This is. I'm so glad we're able to hook up over at Saugerties the last couple of weeks and get to hear about this. I mean, this is very intelligent. Jenny is a horse show girl. She knows the deal. She rides in shows. So this is no doubt birthed out of experience. But you tell us, what is barnmanager.com?
So barnmanager.com is a web-based barn management software system. So it's based in the cloud. It's not CD-based. That's the past. We are the future. And what happens is the users can streamline and organize all of their horse care records. Users can build comprehensive profiles to record and manage every detail of each horse care in their barn. Data is safely stored in the cloud, like I said, and you're able to access it from anywhere. So from your cell phone, from your iPad, from your desktop, anywhere that you have internet access, you can get at your records. And this is very important. Horse people are on the go. We travel. We're mobile. We need to be able to be connected at all times if we want to step into the future. And we're really excited about our program. Our users are obsessed with it. We have lots of testimonials on YouTube that you can check out at Barn Manager One is our page. And basically, we created this program to solve a problem. The disorganized, frustrating paper trail that barns often have, whether it's from, you know, where's the coggins? When was this horse last shod? When was this horse last injected? To when did this horse last jump? And also to billing. We want to make life a lot easier for horse people because we are horse people and we know the problems they have.
Well, and then the horses end up getting better care because, my gosh, we all know there's staff turnover, horses come and go. Like everybody keeps saying, it's about program, it's about consistency. We encourage people to keep a journal to record what they're doing with the horses. It does matter. So this is right up that alley. I mean, the horses are the ones that benefit from this.
Right. So in our program, we have after you've created like a profile for the horse and, you know, you have all the basic information, you can work directly with a work log and a calendar. Like our calendar syncs directly to, if you have an iPhone, to your iCal, or if you use Google, then you can get your Google calendar or any other format of that sort. So every day, instead of writing in a journal, you can plug it in to your iPad, to your iPhone, to your computer, and it will populate in other places within our program. And you can pull it up everywhere. So instead of, you know, oh, I left my journal at home today or my notebook I can't write down, it's right there at your fingertips. Everybody has their cell phone at all times. And I think it's very important to write down what you do with your horse every day, how it felt, just, you know, little notes. Because you know what? If a problem pops up later down the line, like, oh, he's not feeling that great, you can kind of look back and maybe put the pieces together to see where maybe, you know, oh, he wasn't feeling great, you know, 2 weeks ago. You know, maybe he just got his shots. I don't know, anything. That's a really great way to keep your horse happy and healthy. It's really, really detailed note-taking.
Yeah, that's so good. That is exactly what we've been discussing. And that is, I mean, the training, what you do with them each day, the feeding, the management is so, so important. So that's what you're offering is really the ability to manage these horses more efficiently and inside the very busy and chaotic show world. But also, I mean, for personal use as well, I've right now only got a few horses, but I could see, well, geez, I mean, I could keep all their papers, all their show stuff, everything right there. And my husband and I are not always in the same place with the same material, so we can log in with the cloud system. It just comes onto our phone, right?
Yeah, it's great, especially if you're on the show and maybe the barn has to split up. One person's at, you know, one show or somebody's at home or you guys are at two different shows. It's really great because you can see your deworming, your medications, your coggins. You can see everything that you'd usually have to, you know, scramble at home to find in a binder. It's really important for people on the road and people at home to keep that constant communication open. And then,
I'm such a technologically, like, retarded person. I'm just trying to get my head around how does one acquire this? It's an app. Is it just on the iPhone or a computer or kind of like what are our guidelines technology-wise?
So it is a cloud-based program. So It is, you can pull it, you go to barnmanager.com and you sign up. You just type in your email address and put in a password, and it's going to, you know, send you a message, and you just start from there, and then you're going to get a custom URL. So let's say your barn is Jumping Horse Acres. Your URL will be jumpinghorseacres.barnmanager.com, and you just use that directly. It's your own private URL. You are the key to the portal, and that's basically where you will go all the time to access all your information. It will be saved in your phone. I see people all the time just tapping on their phone and logging in information of our current users. It's really, really great. And information is never lost, never destroyed or misplaced, because it automatically saves in the clouds. That's the great thing about cloud computing.
So there's not an individual app. You just basically use your browser on your phone and go to it. Now, I noticed the website's set up pretty simply and should be pretty easy to use on your phone.
Yes. So the website is it's web-based, so it's going to pull up on your phone. We made the website so that it will always pull up your phone. We are actually working on an app. It will be coming out probably this summer. It just wasn't up to our standards just yet, so we made the website device compatible, basically, is the technical term.
Now, if I have a barn, let's say Emily and I are running a stables and we have four or five people underneath us that are working there as well, does everybody have access to it? Are we all signing in under the same login, or can your employees get a different login? What's the scoop there?
That's actually a great question. So there's going to be obviously an admin who creates the account, but then the admin has the ability.
That'd be me
to,
because I wouldn't let Emily do it.
Exactly. So you're going to create the account.
No.
And this is funny. This is great. So you're going to create the account, and you can put your admins on. So the admin, let's say it's your account, and I'm going to put my barn manager on. I'm going to put my accountant on. I'm going to put, if I have a secretary, or you want to put your vet or farrier so that you can start opening up that stream of communication. But let's say you don't want everybody to have access to everything. You can give them, you know, full access, limited access, and just viewing access. Some people can edit.
Okay.
Some people can. It's really, you can structure it any way that fits your business the best. I actually think that's the best thing about our program, is that we didn't want to put our opinion about how you should run your business on anyone. So we've made it so basic that you can format it, personally format it in every function to fit your program. That is the most important thing, because everybody has their own programs. Everybody has their own way of doing things, and nobody's right or wrong. But what everybody needs to do is be organized and stay on top of things, and that's what we're here to help you with, is keeping proper record keeping, because it doesn't matter what field or industry you're in, without proper record keeping, you're a mess. Things get lost. Things go by the wayside, and that's when problems happen. And we really believe that being meticulous is the key to success, but not everybody has that mentality. So we set it up to make it easy for you. We put all the pieces together at your fingertips, on your iPhone, on your iPad, to help you with success.
Now, can we pay extra to get Emily private training from you?
Of course you can.
I do struggle. Glenn knows me well enough. I do struggle. I try, you know.
But you know what? I'm a team player.
You have a kind of a geeky voice. You have a kind of geeky husband, so that helps. I mean, that does help.
Some people get a little scared. They're like, oh, no, it's technologically advanced. I can't handle it. But I was with a barn just last weekend doing a setup with them, and she goes, oh, my God, this is so much fun. Like, it's fun because it is. It's fun. You're like, you get to see everything that you do right in front of you at your fingertips, and it's highlighted, color-coded. It's pretty. Like, it's something that you want to work with, because it's a lot better than lots of scribble notes. Your eye can actually focus in on something and be like, oh, we have a vet appointment coming up, and then click on it and see, like, past vet notes from, like, the last visit to see, oh, this horse, you know, was a little funny behind left. Like, it's really great and interesting because you can go back and remind yourself. It's like reading a journal, but a really fun interactive journal.
And it's like anything else. When you these and being a geek, I know how this goes. And being a guy with ADD, I know how this goes. You know, we all have best intentions to start something, and you, it does take some effort to get all of this started, get your horses in and everything done. There is a point, and I'm sure you've seen it, and I'm sure you have statistics to show, when you do get all your horses in and you have to start keeping it up. I mean, it's only as good as the information that you put in. But once you reach a certain point, it probably is 2 to 3 months down the road where you've been doing it for a while, then you want to keep it up. Then you're more motivated to keep it up because everything's in there and you don't want to lose that momentum. Is that what you've seen with dealing with human nature here?
I think the time frame is even shorter than that. Think that once your horses are in, your riders are in, your owners are in, it depends on what kind of business you have, obviously. Or even if you just have your own horses at home and you want to keep, but I keep account for my horses. I want to keep thorough records for them. Once it's in and you just start using it, it becomes, I would say, within a month. Like, I've noticed that people, if they're using it, you know, they do the setup, that's what they kind of do it like a little bit over a week, you know, kind of not like just sit down and do it. Once they're in and they just kind of start going, within a month they're using it. Like the people who use it every single day. And I'm not exaggerating when I say that. They use it every day.
That's what I would have thought. Once you've got it started, if you can get through that initial enter everything and take the time to do that, then in your mind you're sort of committed and it's like, oh, I got to keep it up now because I did all that. So I can see that. I can see how that works. How much is it before we run out of time here?
So we just do, it's just a flat rate of $40 a month, or it's $400 for the year, which means to give you 2 months free. But just to go back to what you just said, a really great thing about us is we're a very personal company. We are very invested in this program. It comes from our hearts. The creator, it's just, it's so close, near and dear to her. And we do personal setup. So if you're in our area, we're going to come help you. We're going to set you up. If you're not near us, we can do a Skype session. We can talk on the phone. I will do a walkthrough. Like, we are here for you. And I think a lot of programs out there, or, you know, previously existing
software programs. Oh, you can't find the
guy
who designed most apps on the phone. You're not going to talk to anybody ever.
Where's the feedback button? If you press the feedback button in the right-hand corner of the screen, it goes directly to our emails. And we love our phones, and we always have them in our hands. We're going to answer right away. You are directly connected to us, and that is a really big thing because a lot of people, you send an email, you don't get a response for 3 weeks. That's not okay. You need an answer right then and there, and we're going to help you with that.
Now, is it $40 flat or per horse? How does that work?
Flat. Doesn't matter
how
many.
So I can have one horse or 10 horses or 20 horses.
Or 50, yeah. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, you guys are doing some big barns. You've got some big barns, huh, with a lot of horses.
But our program's so simple that the number doesn't it's not a factor in it. The program is just that easy to use that it doesn't matter how many horses you have.
I'm glad to hear that because I have seen a couple of others of these that are trying to really tie it into the vets and everything, and then it gets complicated. And what ends up happening is nobody uses it. That's what ends up happening. It's got to be simple, especially for us horse people and those like me who have severe ADD. For us to keep it up and to keep using it, that's the only way it's going to happen, is if it is that simple.
It is, and it really is that simple. And we worked with a lot of top barn managers from around the country, and we've gotten a lot of feedback from a lot of people, and we're constantly working on creating the best product. I think that's very key, is that we're not stuck on what we have right now. We're going to keep getting better and better, rolling out more features, being very innovative, because we really want this to be a cross-discipline. Every type of person can use this program. And I think that's really going to be the key to our success and what people are going to really love about us, that it's so basic, it's so simple, but it's going to do the trick.
Well, you can find it at barnmanager.com. It's very simple, barnmanager.com. You'll see all of the details there. And basically, you know, everything's explained on the homepage. I do like how simple that is. And you just hit the get started with the 14-day free trial, which is something that's really cool. Now, if they don't like it, and do they have to stick with it, or can they cancel it after 14 days?
You can cancel it, but I know you're going to like it.
Okay, good, cool. Well, you know, and
it does look cool.
That's why we do a 14-day free trial on stuff. I love that you offer that. A lot of times they're only offering 3 or 4 day free trials, and really you can't try anything in 3 or 4 days. So I like that it's a 14-day free trial at barnmanager.com. Thank you so much for joining us, Jennifer, and good luck with it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jenny. We'll talk to you soon.
Well, we have run out of time here today. It flew by. Thank you so much to Emily for setting all these guests up and getting it all aligned. We appreciate that. I absolutely was enthralled by Paul. He was very
he's awesome.
You know,
isn't he cool?
And, you know,
there's a hilarious picture on Facebook now that you know him. I posted it on the S Equestrian page. Paul, you know, I mean, he rides for the top owners in the States, you know, very high-end deal here. He did a photo bomb at the last Grand Prix. The guy that was winning, they were taking the picture, and Paul rode back behind on his horse and gave him bunny ears. It was hilarious.
Well, that's you can see all of that at sequestrian.com. That's ECE Equestrian Company. That's on Facebook, or you can go to sequestrian.com as well. Emily,
yes.
We will talk to you again next month. Enjoy your time up there in the great state of New York.
Thank you. We'll talk to you guys soon.
Don't forget you can get our app. Go to the iOS or Android app store on your phones. Search for Horse Radio Network. Download it. You can catch the Horses in the Morning recorded version right after the show every single day. And all of our other shows, all 10 shows, you can find them all there. It's the simplest, easiest way to listen. But if you can't do that, then just go to horseradionetwork.com. All of our shows are there as well. We'll be back here tomorrow morning live on Horses in the Morning. It's Really Bad Ads Day. We're moving it from Friday to Wednesday because we have off on Friday. So it's Really Bad Ads Day tomorrow and all our usual guests here on a Wednesday morning. We hope you join us then. Thank you so much, Jennifer. Thank you, Emily. Talk to you again next month. Be safe, everybody.